This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We'll begin today with a closer look at a new push on Beacon Hill to combat domestic violence. House Speaker Robert DeLeo is sponsoring new legislation that would significantly strengthen the state's domestic violence laws. It would toughen penalties, make strangulation a felony, and educate judges and prosecutors about domestic violence.
Many advocates applaud the effort, but some defense attorneys worry the bill goes too far and may violate the rights of the accused. But the measure has a great deal of momentum due to last August's high-profile murder of 27-year-old Jennifer Martell. She was stabbed to death, allegedly by her boyfriend, Jared Remy, son of Red Sox announcer Jerry Remy. So let's talk now with two people who support the new bill and who have some concerns. First, Maureen Gallagher. She's policy director for Jane Doe, Inc., a nonprofit focused on sexual assault and domestic violence. Maureen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. Also with us is Randy Chapman. He's a criminal defense attorney and former president of the Massachusetts Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Randy, welcome to you as well.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you. So let me just start with this basic question. Massachusetts has actually been quite ahead of the game for some time regarding its overall domestic violence laws. But why in particular do you think, Maureen, and I'll just start with you, that domestic violence is a type of crime that needs to be treated differently and have its own set of laws than other, you know, sort of violent crimes, and now especially?
Well, I think it is a unique crime in that there are dynamics around domestic violence, around power and control, and the tactics that abusers can use to with victims to prevent them from reporting or seeking services or you know, achieving their own independence. So I think that those things need to be considered when looking at how to address those particular offenders.
Mm. And Randy, do you agree with that, or do you take any exception to it?
No, I think there's certainly aspects of domestic violence that require a unique set of skills and to some extent have to be treated a little bit differently. My concern, obviously, is that you swing the pendulum so far that you obstructed an innocent defendant's ability to properly protect himself. These are very, very difficult cases because they're quite contentious, oftentimes ending up in the probate court, and there are many times that the system can be abused when you set up and place so much power in the hands of a wife, and say that, you know, we're going to give you all the basically your word will drive a defendant into jail. And I have some concerns that sometimes they go too far.
Okay, so we'll talk in a moment about specific aspects of this bill that may raise those concerns. But Maureen, let me turn back to you, because the bill, as sponsored by House Speaker Robert DeLeo, does many, many things, two of which are it creates new categories, domestic assault and battery and strangulation as separate offenses. And this would be the first time that strangulation, it would be its own offense. And in this case, under the bill, it would be a felony. Why do you think those things are necessary in particular?
Well, I think that's a great question. They're very important. Strangulation, for example, is as a felony, is a bill that we've been supporting for a number of years. Strangulation is a very serious physical assault. We see in research has shown that particularly in domestic violence situations that it's a frequent tactic and also an indicator of further lethal violence. So we feel that it needs to be addressed and the level of seriousness of the crime that it is.
Okay.
In terms of the domestic violence specific offenses, again, it's very difficult when if it is categorized simply as an assault and battery when we look at previous offenses of offenders. And also, you know, there are federal laws in terms of firearms prohibitions for people who have committed misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence. It makes it easier to delineate those.
Hmm. Now, Randy Chapman, I've read that some defense attorneys have some concerns with just how domesticity is defined under the terms of this bill. I mean, there was a lawyer quoted in the Boston Globe that said if this bill passes as written, that two roommates who happen to be living together and get into some sort of altercation, one of them could be charged under the new domestic violence laws.
Well, yes. I mean, there's always a concern that when you start to drill down into the statute, we always look at these and you take the Jared Remy case and you say, look, this is the classic horrible case that requires some type of legislative reaction. And what you forget, though, is that there are many people who are living in domestic situations that, and it's opened and becomes a ripe situation here for it to be used in ways that were not necessarily intended, where you have a victim who is much, for example, much larger than the defendant, and they make the allegation, and then next thing you know, the wife can get arrested for the domestic assault and battery because the husband was making the allegation against her first, or situations where you have roommates. You have to be very careful when writing these statutes that they don't become so overbroad as to create classes of individuals that were not necessarily intended to be given this kind of extraordinary protection.
Maureen Gallagher, what's your response to that? There seems to be a fear that while the bill is well-intentioned, that that it's just reaching too far.
Well, I don't see that as the case. I don't have the level of I'm not an attorney. However, I believe that the family and household member is similar to the definition in the 209A statute, which is for domestic abuse prevention orders. So I don't know that there has been necessarily a new class created here. I do think that we always need to be cautious of how victims could potentially be seen as perpetrators depending on accusations, which is why I think law enforcement is encouraged to look at predominant aggressor, primary aggressor issues, and actually really ask a lot of questions and find out more information about the history of violence in that relationship rather than one incident at a time. Mm. And that's what some of the other language in the bill addresses.
Right. We don't have the time to go into a lot of detail about every aspect of this bill, but there is one more section of it which particularly caught my attention, quite frankly, out of many of them, and that is the new requirement, should this bill pass, that bail officials would have to wait some 6 to 8 hours before releasing an accused offender, after they post bail. Randy Chapman,
yep.
6 to 8 hours, does that sound unreasonable to you for someone to wait?
Well, in a classic domestic violence case, like a Remy case, you'd say the person shouldn't have gotten out. But you have to look at all of these cases. I've had cases where the husband, no history of violence at all, struck his wife with threw a pillow at his wife. The police respond. They have a mandatory arrest policy. And now, even though the wife never wanted him to be arrested to begin with, there was no reason to detain him any further, this will now mandate that he has to be held for 6 hours. And it actually sometimes can put a problem where a victim now recognizing that might not report the crime or might not report for help. So you have to be very careful in balancing any statute to recognize that some of the people that are arrested might actually be innocent or some people may not be held. So one size fits all never fits anyone.
Right. Well, Randy, but let me follow up with that for a second, because I think it's not unheard of that when someone posts bail, an accused offender, one of the first things they do, again, this doesn't happen in every case, but it's not unheard of that one of the first things they do is they return to the person making the accusation. And
absolutely.
and sometimes the victim just doesn't have time to prepare him or herself for, confronting the person they're accusing again or they're once again in fear. I mean, so I guess what I'm wondering is this is one part of the bill that really seems to be designed for victim safety. And,
well, it is. And I understand that it's well-intentioned. It's almost like, it's a chance to give a victim a head start. And I get that. But again, when you have people who, situations where somebody might actually be innocent, where the person does not pose an ongoing threat to the individual, where nobody reasonably believes that the person should be held, this says that person has to be held. The police make arrests many times and they'll say, look, I don't want to arrest you. The victim doesn't want you to be arrested. There's no physical injury. There's no history of domestic violence. There's none of those dangerous indicators that you're talking about. And now we're saying we're going to hold everybody for at least 6 hours. And I fear that what you've done is you're sort of throwing away the Constitution in an effort to save a few people. And that is it's a dangerous road to go down. Hmm. There are certainly cases. I have no problem, and I applaud the bill to the extent that it gives clerks greater authority to hold somebody under a 58A or detain someone until court the next day. And more often than not, perhaps the person should be held. Hmm. But to say that the person should be held in every case, regardless, and again, these may be women that get held who are really having the statute used against them who are truly innocent, but the husband reported it first, and the woman didn't have a chance to respond. So it's not always going to be the evil domestic violence guy that we're all picturing in our head, the Jared Remy. It very likely could be somebody who was far more who could be innocent, who is far less culpable, and shouldn't be held in jail for 6 hours to
right.
compound the problem.
So, Maureen Gallagher, let me ask you in the last minute and a half or so that we have here. Randy Chapman once again mentioned the fact that the case of Jared Remy is really the thing that's given this new bill a lot of attention and momentum. But, you know, as has been exhaustively reported over the past many months, Jared Remy was in and out of the criminal justice system for decades. He just happened to have, by virtue of his family and his lawyer, like very, very good legal assistance. But I didn't see anything necessarily in the reporting about the times he had been in court that indicated that the laws in and of themselves were unsatisfactory. It just seemed as if the criminal justice system failed in applying the laws that we already have.
Well, and I think that what this bill does, because it has taken a comprehensive approach and it offers criminal justice solutions, it also offers training and for judges and law enforcement and to really try to lift the whole systems up, I think, in terms of knowledge and understanding and how to really think about these cases and look at them and not be focused on the incident at hand, but let's look at the history. So I think the bill does that in a number of places. And so I'm hoping that, unfortunately, there was a tragic murder that has created some energy around this. A number of these provisions we've been advocating for years. I don't think this is a knee-jerk reaction that's meant to fix one problem in one case. I think it's an attempt to really hold offenders accountable and to provide victim safety. And if there's some funding around that to support it, then I think that there are some positive things that can prevent a future tragedy.
Well, Maureen Gallagher is Policy Director for Jane Doe, Inc., a nonprofit that focuses on sexual assault and domestic violence. Maureen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And I might also just add that the SafeLink hotline number is 877-785-2020 if anyone out there is in need of services for themselves or others.
Well, thanks for that. And we'll put a link to that and that number on our website, radioboston.org. And Randy Chapman, criminal defense attorney and former president of the Massachusetts Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Great to have you as well. Thank you so much.
Have a good day. Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, the longtime Boston Marathon director Dave McGilvery prepares for his toughest race yet. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.